I'm very glad to have so many people here. I must tell you, we were surprised when John Alterman and Haya Malka were first mapping out this conference. We asked ourselves, would anybody attend? And we're dramatically impressed that there's been such a turnout. And I think it taps into a reality that is sadly common in Washington, and that, you know, when maps were first done in the United States, there was a terra incognita that was in the middle of the United States, and nobody knew what the hell was out there. Well, in a way, we kind of have terra incognitas that develop in the policy world in Washington, and North Africa and the Maghreb tends to be one of those spaces. For varying reasons, there's just a kind of a collective amnesia of history that's been in the way, and we're rediscovering this landscape now. It didn't go anyplace, you know, it's been dynamic. We have just chosen not to be engaged to think about it as creatively as we should have these years. And I think we're making up for lost time. It was a superb day, a very, very good presentations this morning. I thought they were just excellent, and want to say thank you to those that were possible that joined us. It's my pleasure to introduce our keynote speaker for lunch, and that's Bob Godec. Bob is the principal deputy coordinator for counterterrorism, but he comes with a very rich personal history in this area, was our ambassador in Tunisia, and is a pioneer now in so many of these discussions that we've been having all morning. And I think it's going to be a very rich experience for all of us to be able to listen to him. We want to thank him for coming. I will tell you, we're the beneficiaries of a problem that developed because Dan Benjamin was called away at the last minute, and rarely do you have a deputy that's absolutely fully qualified to replace his boss, and we do in this instance. So, Bob, we're delighted that you're here. Why don't you come on up and lead this conversation, and then John Alterman will help field the questions from the floor. Thank you all for being here.
Good afternoon, and it's wonderful to be here at CSIS. Thank you very much, John, for the opportunity to speak to such a distinguished group, and I have to say it's quite a pleasure to see such a large group. It's also a pleasure, frankly, to be able to move a little bit more easily around Washington. All of this snow recently, I am impressed that you all have made it, and I am glad that it's at least a little bit easier to get around the city. Today I'd like to share a few thoughts on the Maghreb, a region that is growing slowly, I think, in visibility and importance. It's a region in which I have a deep interest, and it's a region that faces many challenges, and I know you've been talking about some of those challenges today. It's a region that I also believe there is much hope, where there is much hope, or for which there is much hope. I'm here, of course, to speak about opportunities and challenges for U.S.-Maghreb cooperation, particularly on terrorism. Before I turn specifically to terrorism, though, I do have some general observations, a few comments I'd like to make about the Maghreb itself. First, the five countries of the Maghreb share much. Centuries ago, the region was united. And even today, of course, from religion to cuisine, the citizens of the five countries have many ties that bind them. And with only 100 million people, more or less, across a vast area, there are good reasons for them to come together. For together, the countries and the people of the Maghreb are far better able to address their problems. And from poverty to politics, there are problems. Second, despite the ties, there are also major differences, of course. Indeed, the differences are probably greater than one imagines from a distance. Some of these are the result of history or culture, but some are also political. And unfortunately, these disparities, in particular the lack of resolution of the Western Sahara question, block the cooperation and integration the region needs. For the region to achieve real success, the key differences must be resolved or at least bridged. And I believe regional organizations such as the Arab Maghreb Union must be strengthened. Third, U.S. interest and engagement has waxed and waned over time. The interest of the Maghreb countries in the United States has not always been high. Some of the Maghreb countries have at times been in broad opposition to the United States. All of them have degrees of opposition to at least some key U.S. policies. That said, today, from security to commerce, the United States has wide-ranging and important ties to the Maghreb. And the administration of President Obama intends to remain engaged. We're actively looking for opportunities to cooperate with our partners in the Maghreb and to advance our common interests. These three overarching observations have an impact on a major challenge for the region, terrorism. Terrorism is clearly a defining problem for the Maghreb. It is one the United States can and is helping with. On the positive side of the ledger, the Maghreb's experience in countering terrorism and extremist activity, particularly since 9/11, is broadly a good news story. Having said that, there are serious challenges in each of the five countries. We must not underestimate the intent and the capability of the adversary. And we must not underestimate some of the challenges in the cross-border cooperation that is essential if terrorism is to be defeated. But the positive trends in counterterrorism activity and in relationships in the region point toward significant progress in critical areas. Intelligence sharing, law enforcement and border security cooperation, aggressive counter-messaging and information operations, and efforts to address the local, social, and economic conditions that terrorists seek to exploit. These have all contributed to the inability of al-Qaeda to make significant inroads in the region. Having given you my bottom line up front, I'd like to spend a few minutes discussing four issues. First, the threat from al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb. Second, the response of the countries of the Maghreb. Third, how the United States can help, and with some thoughts on some of the obstacles and challenges to cooperation. And finally, the international dimension. Today, the biggest challenge facing the Maghreb in the terrorist area is, of course, al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb, AQIM. Put simply, AQIM rhetorically supports the use of terrorism to establish an Islamic state in Algeria and the region. It has repeatedly stated its intent to bring down regional governments and to expel Western influence from historically Muslim lands. And, of course, AQIM has carried out acts of terrorism. In terms of statements, strategy, and tactics, AQIM's behavior mirrors that of AQ generally. It uses under or ungoverned spaces to organize, recruit, plan, and to undertake aggressive messaging to build connections with vulnerable local populations. In addition to conducting low-level attacks in northeastern and southern Algeria, AQIM elements have repeatedly targeted Westerners for kidnapping for ransom in the Sahel and have killed a number of local military personnel, an NGO worker, American NGO worker, and a British hostage. Well, AQIM and other affiliated AQ groups have long been of concern to the United States. They've taken on a new significance in the wake of the failed attempt by Umar Farouk Abdulmutallab to detonate a bomb on Northwest Flight 253. The attempted attack made clear that the affiliates, in the case of Flight 253, al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, fully prepared to attack the United States directly, to attack the homeland. While we already had many reasons to be concerned about al-Qaeda affiliates, the attack gave us one more, and a serious one. Whether or not AQIM is working to carry out an attack similar to AQAP, we already know the organization poses a dangerous threat to countries of the region and is a real and immediate threat to American citizens and other Westerners in North Africa. A number of Europeans have been or are now in their hands. And although AQIM has historically not targeted Americans, the willingness of AQIM to target Westerners gives us another reason to redouble our counterterrorism efforts in the region. In the face of the threat of terrorism, each of the five countries of the Maghreb has reacted vigorously. Algeria, a strong partner to the United States in global counterterrorism efforts, has stepped up operations against AQIM with notable success. These efforts have put pressure on AQIM, resulting in a shift of activity to the ungoverned areas of northern Mali and Mauritania. In fact, AQIM faces difficulties in recruiting and increasingly lacks popular support, in Algeria. Algeria has become a model in many respects of resilience and effort after emerging from the challenge of a brutal 12-year civil conflict that may have claimed nearly 100,000 of its citizens' lives. Libya, facing the threat of the Libyan Islamic Fighting Group, took the lead in developing new approaches to counterterrorism. Libya undertook serious rehabilitation efforts with members of the group and arguably influenced the group's decision to break its ties with al-Qaeda. On July 3, 2009, LIFG members in the UK published a communique repudiating the LIFG's merger with al-Qaeda, stating it was invalid. September 2009, six LIFG members in Libya's Abu Salem prison issued a 417-page document that renounced violence and claimed to adhere to a more sound Islamic theology than that espoused by al-Qaeda. Over 100 LIFG members pledged to adhere to this revised doctrine and have been pardoned and released from Libya prison. Libya's success, led by Saif al-Islam, is worth further attention and may serve as a model to apply to other extremist groups. Morocco continues to aggressively target terrorist activities within its borders. It was a target, for example, in 2003 and again in 2007 when commercial establishments, a Jewish community center, U.S. Consulate and America Center in Casablanca, were targets of attack. Tunisia is acutely aware of the threat of AQ, having suffered a major attack on a synagogue in April 2002. It's consistently placed a high priority on combating domestic and regional extremism and terrorism. Mauritania has also been the target of AQIM attacks and has committed the effort to combat the group. In the actions of each of the five countries in the Maghreb, we see positive momentum, giving us reasons to be hopeful. First and foremost, the unilateral efforts of the Maghreb countries remain aggressive and constant. Each of the governments has adapted to the changing nature of a nimble and determined adversary. In addition, the cooperation between and among these countries has been improving. Given the differences I mentioned earlier, this cooperation is far from perfect, but it is improving. We must continue to encourage this trend. One measure of the success of the Maghreb countries is found in AQIM's current situation. Under pressure, AQIM has been unable to conduct a large-scale attack since 2008. The organization appears financially strapped, and a recent increase in hostage taking is clearly an attempt to raise revenue. AQIM has failed to establish a viable presence in Morocco, Tunisia, or Libya. Despite the increase in recruitment of Mauritanians, which is troubling, the Muslim populations of the region do not generally appear attracted to the extremist ideology espoused by AQIM. While the Maghreb governments have had some success in combating AQIM and terrorism, there remains much to be done. The threat remains serious, and I do not want to minimize it. Responding to the commitment of the governments of the region, and with them in the lead, the United States has sought to provide appropriate assistance at appropriate times. Our aid has come in a wide range of areas, including military, intelligence, economic. One important example is U.S. aid in the Trans-Sahara Counterterrorism Partnership, or TSCTP, a multi-year assistance program coordinated among the State Department, Department of Defense, and USAID. The program aims to provide nearly $150 million in training and development assistance to the Trans-Sahara region for the next several years. TSCTP is meant, in part, to help local governments ramp up their counterterrorism capabilities. We hope it will leave behind a cooperative framework that bolsters intergovernmental connections, training, and counterterrorism activity. Bilaterally, the United States has ongoing training assistance with Libya and Morocco via our Anti-Terrorism Assistance Program, ATA. Our ATA programs provide counterterrorism help to police forces from management improvements to tactical training. Libya and Morocco together received over 500,000 in specialized ATA police training for nearly 90 officers over the past fiscal year. And several weeks ago, we restarted our ATA program with Algeria. Working with the Department of Defense, we've also used the Section 1206 authorities to bolster Maghreb countries' capabilities in such areas as maritime security, general border security, and border monitoring capabilities. Beyond our direct counterterrorism aid, over the past several years, we've bolstered cooperation at the political level through the Arab Maghreb Union. As in TSCTP, our discussions with AMU country representatives attempt to approach the counterterrorism challenge and priorities in North Africa from a broad perspective. We address not only training and equipment issues, but also such challenges as public diplomacy and economic development. This latter challenge, economic development, is major. The very high regional unemployment rate of 16%, combined with a massive youth bulge, where more than one-third of the Maghreb's population is under the age of 15, creates an ideal environment for the proliferation of extremist ideologies and terrorist organizations. By promoting jobs and increasing growth, eliminating barriers to trade, and integrating economies, the Maghreb governments will help counter homegrown extremism. The U.S. government helps in this effort and engages the countries of the Maghreb in senior policy dialogues. We provide technical assistance to encourage private sector-led growth and a wide range of other help. Efforts are currently underway to expand ties between the private sectors in the United States and the North African nations through the creation of private sector networks, innovation and leadership incubators, and the launching of investment promotion programs. So there's already a great deal of counterterrorism cooperation, both large and small, and in a wide range of areas and manners that's going on between the United States and the Maghreb. I do not want to paint, however, too rosy a picture. There are serious challenges. The issues vary by country, but broadly speaking, for the United States, these include some concerns about human rights, about slow progress on democracy, about limited capacities in some of the governments. From the perspective of the countries of the Maghreb, of course, the United States is not always a perfect partner either. They have their share of concerns about our policies and actions, which sometimes limit their willingness to accept our help. Finally, I should note that the United States is not alone in efforts to engage with and assist the Maghreb countries on terrorism. Other countries, including France, Italy, and Spain, have strong ties to the region, close to the Maghreb geographically, and in some cases, with large expatriate populations, are committed to the fight against terrorism. The European countries offer equipment, training, and a wide range of development programs that are essential to meeting the challenge. The United States coordinates closely with our European allies, both capital to capital and on the ground through our embassies. One final thought to conclude. For the foreseeable future, AQIM will pose a threat to the Maghreb and the Sahel. While AQIM will continue to carry out attacks and kidnappings, however, it does not pose the same level of threat that some groups do in other regions. Considerable credit goes to the commitment of regional governments to counter the threat and to the absence of widespread support for ideology, the ideology of extremism. While the relative difficulties faced by AQIM at this moment offer some hope for the future, we must not be complacent. The governments of the Maghreb rightly take the threat seriously. The United States, as a friend and ally, must continue to do the same. For whatever the uncertainties about the future, we do know this. To succeed in combating AQIM, to ultimately defeat it, we must remain vigilant and smart. And we must continue to build and strengthen our cooperation and coordination with our North African partners. We must collect and share intelligence. We must enhance capacity, both our own and our partners. We must plan and train together. We must be ready to respond nimbly to a crisis. For it's only through the hard, slow work of counterterrorism cooperation that we will ultimately succeed. And succeed we must, for the future of the people of both the Maghreb and the United States. Thank you very much. Or I can go down there. Okay. Well, I'll stay here and you sit there. How's that? However you prefer.
Thank you very much, Ambassador Godec, for that excellent presentation. Ambassador Godec has a little time for Q&A, but as he explained to me, because he is in charge in Dan Benjamin's absence, he's the adult supervision for a whole number of people who may need to be supervised. So the question-and-answer period may not go on as extensively as it otherwise would. As Chaim mentioned, there are Alterman rules of engagement for questions. The first is that you identify yourself. The second is that you only ask one question until everybody's had a chance to go. And the third is that you ask a question in the form of a question, which is an actual question that can be answered and not a statement followed by, what do you think of my statement? If we have agreement on that, I'd be happy to take the first question. Sir. David, if you can just wait for the microphone.
David Mack from the Middle East Institute.
It's good to see you.
I appreciated your passing gesture toward issues like democracy and human rights. And I don't mean to put you too much on the spot, but isn't it true that we have discovered the serious limitations to official democracy promotion efforts and the degree to which, at least in some circumstances, they can interfere with our bilateral counterterrorism efforts?
Thanks. I would emphasize, I think, that democracy promotion is obviously, A, hard. It's never likely to be easy. And B, we have clearly, as you suggest, a multiplicity of interests in places. And we have to balance off our competing concerns and our interests. And there are going to be times when one issue or another takes precedence. I think that there's no doubt in this region that there are some serious challenges on democracy. I think that for the United States, we have to continue to uphold our values, to make clear when and where appropriate, privately, maybe in some instances, in some places, publicly at times, that we will live up to our values. We will continue to say and do what we need to offer support for the process of democratization and on human rights and other issues, which in some cases the governments do not want to hear. At the same time, I think we can balance that. We can balance the promotion of our interest in these areas, our commitment and our values to or with our other objectives. Fundamentally, I don't see these things as being in conflict. And I think we can do both, and I think we need to do both. I think we are doing both in the region right now.
Thank you. Right here in the front.
Peter Gubser, retired president of American Near East Refugee Aid. Mm-hmm. Enjoy your presentation very much, sir. My question is about financing for AQIM. Aside from kidnapping, which I understand, is it primarily indigenous from other parts of the Arab Middle East, from other parts of the Middle East, any other place? Thanks.
I think clearly at the moment they appear to be securing significant funds from kidnapping. There are certainly reports, which you've seen in the press, of payments being made for hostages that were taken. And that is a serious concern. I mean, the United States policy on kidnapping, as you know, is not to pay ransoms, because at the end of the day, paying ransom just fuels the fire. It provides the terrorist groups with funds to carry out their other activities, expand operations, and encourages the taking of additional hostages. So it's frankly, very strongly our view that it's a policy that's not a good one, to pay ransoms for hostages. There are other sources of funding. I think that there are certainly reports of, for example, other sorts of criminal activities of various sorts going on. There are reports of, in the narcotics area, if not direct narcotics trafficking, then at least in some cases payments being made to these groups for things that are happening in their area, protection money basically, permitting things to be conducted or take place. And there are probably payments that are coming in from the outside, from other areas. As you know, I'm sure it's often extremely difficult to get a handle on the dimensions, the specific dimensions of any one particular area in terms of financing. We are, though, the U.S. government and the governments in the region are certainly doing everything possible to put further financial pressure on AQIM and to either block funding or stop funds that might move into the group from any one of a number of sources, whether it be from expatriates, folks in Europe or others trying to transfer funds in or doing other sorts of things. And we do are encouraging, particularly in the area of kidnapping, governments not to make payments. The Algerians, for example, have a strong policy of not making payments, and we share that. The British have a strong policy in this area. And I think that it really is critical that in each of these cases, as we look at each of these funding streams, whether it be kidnapping or other criminal activities or extortion or other activities, that we find ways to block this transfer of funds to the group. It's only by choking this off that we can ultimately defeat them.
Right here in the front.
Thank you. Dan O'Flaherty, National Foreign Trade Council.
Good to see you, Dan.
Good to see you.
I see so many folks I know in here. It's very impressive.
I wonder if you could comment on the role of AFRICOM in counterterrorism in the Maghreb and to what extent it's an asset or to what extent it's a factor.
I think AFRICOM is a very positive factor. I think that AFRICOM has done an excellent job, frankly, engaging in this area. General Ward has been many visits, made plain that they want to engage with the militaries where appropriate, when in ways appropriate, to try to combat the problem. They have supplied training and other sorts of assistance to specific governments to help combat the problem. We've used, as I mentioned, the Section 1206 authorities, which state and DOD have jointly to supply equipment. In the case of Tunisia, for example, we've supplied training and border security equipment under Section 1206, and I know other projects of going forward as well. So I think that that broadly speaking, AFRICOM has done really an excellent job of engaging. Frankly, I'm sure you remember very well how delicate and difficult the whole stand-up of AFRICOM was at the beginning of the process. There were lots of questions. There were lots of doubts in the region about what was it that the United States was up to. My own sense is that, by and large, a lot of those concerns have been allayed at this point, and that the engagement has been productive. AFRICOM itself has a big concern with AQIM, and so they have followed this issue very closely, and they've put resources behind the effort. So I think it's been generally a very positive effort from AFRICOM.
A question right there, sir.
My name is Ahmed Mir. I'm retired from the U.S. Foreign Service. I just wondered, compared to the success of President Obama in Cairo, somehow I think we've got to recognize that the work you're talking about, which is very impressive in North Africa, what the department and the U.S. government is doing, is more short-term. I think the longer this thing takes, the greater will be the adversarial growth. And I think we should work on a little more on propaganda, on trying to diffuse the widespread sort of attitude in the Muslim world that the West is against Islam, is against Muslims. And somehow, I think we've got to make sure that we are aware of that impact, that we also should recognize that we should encourage the Israelis to also minimize the image and the abusive nature of things that happen in that part of the world. I think unless
the answerable question?
Well,
if we can get to an answerable
basically,
question.
I'm simply saying that is something like that going on.
And the short answer is yes. You know, I will tell you, having been ambassador out in Tunisia, there were not too many conversations that I had with Tunisians where sooner or later the issue of Israel and the Palestinians and U.S. policy didn't come up in some fashion. I am keenly aware that there are overarching policy issues of enormous importance, and we can all list them. And they start with the whole question of Israel and the Palestinians and the treatment of the Palestinians and U.S. policy and all the rest of it. But it goes on from there, and I won't list them all because you know them as well as I do. I believe that this administration is strongly committed to addressing these challenges. You know that President Obama appointed George Mitchell as a special representative and is working hard on the question of Israeli-Palestinian-Arab peace. There are a lot of other things that are going on. A lot of follow-up is happening, not as rapidly as folks would like on any area, but it's happening. Follow-up on President Obama's speech in Cairo. My own view is that these things need to happen, and they're really urgently important, and obviously they affect the overall ability to do just about everything in this area, but in this region. But we must, at the same time, focus on small, concrete, achievable goals. We can't and we shouldn't all try to work on Israeli-Palestinian peace. What we should try to do is let the folks who are working on that work hard on it and accomplish the mission, and then we should work, those of us who are working on North Africa or on counterterrorism or other things, should work in areas that we can make a difference to accomplish things. And I think that's what's happening in this area. And I think a lot can be done even in the absence of progress on these bigger issues. We have a long way to go on the bigger issues, but I don't think that the fact that they're out there means we can't accomplish other things. Quite the contrary, I think we can and we should.
Thank you. Maybe the last question, because he has a day job. Sir, right here in the front.
Sir, thank you very much for your presentation. Recently, the State Department has decided to maintain...
Sir, could you identify yourself,
please? Sorry. My name is Fouad Arif. I'm a Moroccan news agency based here in Washington. State Department has recently decided to maintain the designation of Al-Qaeda in the Maghreb as a foreign terrorist organization. I would like to know what does that mean from an operational point of view?
Well, I mean, practically speaking, what it means is that... You know, the group is designated as a terrorist organization. You know, funds can't be transferred to it. There are a variety of prohibitions and specific things in place that are intended to block a movement of individuals and funds. We can certainly get you a very detailed list. I mean, it's a long list of prohibitions under U.S. law that go into effect when an organization is designated as a foreign terrorist organization. You know as well, of course, that there's the UN part of this. There's the Al-Qaeda sanctions resolution, and group is designated as well under the UN, I believe. So.
Good. Well, first of all, I thank Ambassador Godec for his presentation today. Also, before we depart, I would be remiss if I didn't thank the staff here at CSIS who made everything possible. You've seen Chaim Malka. You have seen around the margins Michael Jubin, who's made a lot of this happen. Allison Hutchings, also in my office. My team of three amazing interns. When I came into the office today at 7:45, I was the last person in. My interns, Kelly Steindl, Brandon Borovoy, and Whitney Purdom have all done all sorts of unseen things to make today as interesting and smooth as it was. Thank you all. We hope to see you all again soon.